Buddhist tradition is full of stories about prophetic dreams. The Buddha had some prophetic dreams before his awakening. One of them was that he was walking back and forth doing walking meditation on a huge mountain of excrement, and yet he wasn't soiled by the excrement. He interpreted that to mean that when he became Buddha, he would be receiving lots of gifts, lots of offerings, but his mind would not be soiled by them. He would use them wisely, seeing the danger and getting attached to them, and freeing himself from that danger. That kind of dream is useful. It's about what to do. After all, the mind is basically a doer. We're constantly fabricating the present moment, putting things together. And then the present moment passes away, and we have to put together another present moment, and then another one. We're constantly doing this. And we need guidance. And sometimes the mind communicates it to itself through visions or dreams. And sometimes other beings can communicate. But the question of where it comes from doesn't matter. The question is, what are they telling you? And is it in line with the Dharma? Which is one of the reasons why it's good to study the Dharma so you can get a sense of what's really in line with the Dharma and what's not. Because the dreams you might have that talk about past lifetimes are just different facts about nature, about the world. If they have no practical guidance, in other words, they have nothing to do with what you might choose to do or not, you ask yourself, what kind of Dharma lesson is there with things about the past? The main lesson is how changeable you are. How changeable you have been. As the Buddha said, the mind is more variegated than the animal kingdom. Because every animal had a desire to become that kind of animal. These are all possibilities in the human mind. There are lots of things you could be. You have been lots and lots of things. So you might use that thought to develop a sense of sangvega. You see yourself in a very poor position in a previous lifetime. I said, yep, I've been there. See yourself wealthy, powerful. Yep, you've been there. And the question is, did you use your power well? If the vision or the dream doesn't tell you, just let it go. One of my favorite dreams in the forest tradition is one of John Suwat's. He was in a coma after his accident. And one night he found himself sitting next to his body on the bed. He looked at the monitors that had talked about his blood pressure and his oxygen levels, all the other information that they get. He said the numbers didn't look very good. So he thought, let's just change those numbers. After he came out of the coma, he mentioned this to one of the doctors, and the doctor says, ah, that explains it. Your numbers were looking really bad until one night all of a sudden they got very good. So if you can do that with your concentration, okay, go ahead and do it. But otherwise, if something comes along, and it suggests something to do. Ask yourself, would this be in line with the Dharma? And if it seems like it might be in line with the Dharma, then you test it. See what the results are. One of John Mun was in the forest. He was one of those meditators who had lots and lots of visions. So I had to be very careful. If you believe everything you dream, believe everything you can in a vision, you're going to go crazy. The one example he gave, though, was that devas would come and tell him how to do walking meditation. When you do walking meditation, don't gaze around here, gaze there. Focus your eyes down on the path. Don't swing your arms. Don't look at the beauties of nature around you. You've got things to do in your mind, so get the mind focused with as little input from outside as possible. Enough to know that you don't walk off the path. So he tried out the advice and found that it worked. He could get his mind into stronger concentration while he walked. So that's the kind of thing you can test. Something that deals with what you're doing. As I said, the mind is an active mind. And it needs guidance. The problem is it's giving itself lots of different guidances, if you can use that term. We talk about the committee of the mind, and John Lee talks about all the different consciousnesses that are in your body. Your consciousness, the consciousness of the worms and the germs, and the various spirits that hover around your body. And they slip into the mind, either consciously or just barely subconsciously. And that question the mind always has is what to do next, what to do next. As the mind gets more and more still, and the layers of conversation fall away, you find that that's like an ostinato, a repeating theme that goes all the time, what to do next, what to do next. So those are the voices you want to train. When you make up your mind to do something good, you've got to get all the other voices in line with that. Like you're sitting and meditating. There's one voice that says, okay, focus on the breath. Another series of voices that say, no, I'd rather do this, I'd rather do that. You have to ask them, okay, where's that going to lead? Because as the Buddha said, the sign of your wisdom is learning how to look not at what you would like to do, but thinking about the consequences of acting in different ways. And if you see there's something that you would like to do but would give bad results, you learn how to talk to yourself into wanting not to do it. Notice that you don't just force yourself not to do it. You cajole yourself. Use whatever psychology you can think of to get yourself to do what you should be doing and not doing things you shouldn't be doing. Because there are things you may not like to do, but will give good results. So you have to learn how to like them, want to do them. That requires a lot of inner conversation. So the meditation is not simply a matter of being with whatever comes up, and not a matter of trying to snuff out all the voices in the mind. Sometimes you have to reason with the unreasonable voices. Because every desire has its reasons. Years back, I was reading one of those very short introductions from the Oxford Press. It was about early Greek philosophy. They pointed out that one of the big issues was the question, are your passions and your reasons totally separate? Or do all your passions have reasons? And I think the Buddha would be on the side of your passions have their reasons. And often they know that they're not very good, and so they try to hide them, which is why some of your passions seem to be just brute force. But no, they have their reasons. And you want to figure those out. They're trying to get the mind as quiet as you can so you can understand what are the whispered reasons of these impulses in the mind. And when you see what they are, then you can deal with them. This is why when the Buddha talks about understanding what's going on in the mind, it's not just a matter of seeing the drawbacks of your unskillful behavior. You also want to see the allure. What about it is actually attractive, pleasant? What captures your imagination about these things? And when you can see what it is, then you can deal with it. And this is going to require that you go through many layers of conversation. because all too often the mind doesn't like to admit why it likes certain things. What thrill it gets out of lust, what thrill it gets out of anger. Because these things are defilements, ultimately it's going to be dumb. But as we've seen throughout human history, people can dress up their ignorance, they can dress up their stupidity to make it look sophisticated, to make it look reasonable. This is one of the reasons why the Buddha also sets up standards. Take the whole issue of the three perceptions. We see that things are inconstant, stressful, not self. Just on their own, those facts don't really tell you what to do. And if something is inconstant, is it worth it? And you could actually convince yourself that it would be. But then you've got the standards of the Four Noble Truths. And one of those is the third noble truth, that the cessation of suffering is possible. And it's not just a blank lack of suffering. Think about what the Buddha came to teach the five brethren before he taught them the Four Noble Truths. He said, look, I'm going to teach you the way to the deathless. And it's a happiness that's totally unconditioned and totally without any kind of limitation. So that's there in the background, the standard against which you can measure other things. When that's a possibility, then a lot of the things that otherwise would seem worthwhile or worth the effort, even though they're impermanent and constant, suddenly don't seem so worthwhile after all. So this is why the meditation is not simply a matter of noting what comes and goes. There's going to be some arguing back and forth, some reasoning back and forth about what to do, what's worth doing, what's not worth doing. And the conversation will include some conscious reasoning. There will be some subconscious things. Some of the messages will be in words. Some of the messages will be in images. And to really be in charge of your mind, you have to learn how to deal with all these things. And the basic pattern is, think of the Four Noble Truths. How do these things fit in with the Four Noble Truths? Take the Four Noble Truths as your standard. Think about the Buddha's teachings on appropriate attention. All those questions he said that are not worth answering, or even asking, about the future, about the past, about your existence or non-existence here in the present moment. Those questions you put aside, the standards for appropriate attention, things you really should pay attention to are, what is the suffering right now, what's causing it, and what can be done to put an end to it. Those questions are your standard. When there's a conflict inside the mind as to what to do, bring the standard out. Let it pass judgment. That's right, any part of the mind that rebels against it. You have to realize, okay, it's wrong. Even though you may like it a lot, you may side with it. But you've got to realize that for the sake of your true happiness, you have to learn how to see through it. It's lying to you. Anything that's not in line with the Four Noble Truths is an ignoble lie. Think in those terms. And then decide on your actions accordingly.